8 miles per hour. The relative humidity is 65%, and the barometric pressure 29.88 inches and rising. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza in Urbana, it's 79 degrees. It's 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. In Europe, the concept of austerity has meant deep, painful cuts to government spending. The same cannot be said for India, as NPR's Elliot Hannan reports from New Delhi.
The government announcing an austerity drive.
In Europe, the concept of austerity has meant deep and painful cuts in government spending. India's effort, however, looks a little different.
Drive government banning its departments from holding meetings and conferences in five-star hotels. Foreign travel also to be restricted.
Good evening, sir. Welcome to the Oberoi.
Cutting back on government meetings in glitzy hotels like this one in New Delhi seems like window dressing. But making deep spending cuts in India is particularly difficult. Voters see government largesse as a right and usually applaud pork barrel spending. Mihir Sharma, a columnist at the Business Standard, says the government is trying to combat poverty, malnutrition, and other critical needs.
The snotty-nosed 27-year-old analyst on Wall Street might be concerned that the government has not, in fact, announced a cut in entitlements of one kind or another. But the truth is that most of the entitlements that the government has handed out in the past 10 to 15 years are desperately needed.
Anyway, says Sharma, the concept of austerity is a bit different in India.
What austerity actually does wind up meaning here is a very sort of strange Gandhian thing, which is that we want our leaders and our government to be demonstrating some sort of personal commitment to an austere lifestyle.
The government has also said it will cut 10% of discretionary spending and is putting a hiring freeze on the civil service. But analysts say that's unlikely to make much of a dent in India's $91 billion deficit. For NPR News, I'm Elliot Hannan in New Delhi.
The Illinois General Assembly and its governor are at an impasse over the future of gambling. The governor has not signed a new measure that would allow five new casinos, including ones for Chicago and Danville. That's a prospect that could generate millions for debt-ridden Illinois. One provision would allow horse tracks to operate slot machines. Opponents balk at any expansion of gambling. Backers say slots will save the horse racing industry's 40,000 employees, everyone from owners to jockeys. Illinois Public Radio's Michael Puente profiles the horse racing industry and who's got its back in Springfield.
That sound, of course, signals the start of any horse race. On this night, I'm at Balmoral Park in South Suburban Crete. Bettors have been making their way to Balmoral for more than 80 years for harness racing.
There are, leading out in the middle there, this special
I picked a lucky day to come. A two-year-old filly named Dunin Red is making her racing debut.
What do you say, Red? Come on, Red.
That's our horse.
Did you win?
Yeah. It's our horse.
Dwayne Inhouse of Ottawa, Illinois, owns the horse.
This is her first start, and she won her first start.
Inhouse and his family train and raise horses at a farm about 80 miles southwest of Chicago. He says he's struggling because horse racing has to compete with so many other outlets for gambling. There are 10 casinos in the state, and there are more in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Indiana. That's why folks directly tied to the horse racing industry, like Inhouse, are betting so much on Governor Pat Quinn. They want him to sign a bill that would allow slot machines at racetracks.
It can only help a lot of people to lose their jobs if the horse industry collapsed.
If we don't get the slots, we're done. We are just really done.
That's Debbie Allison, a Crete resident who's trained racehorses for three decades. She's convinced slot machines would make the racetracks more viable and keep them open. Allison says her son moved to the East Coast to make his living in horse racing because the industry's dying in Illinois. There are just too few visitors, and the purses for winning jockeys don't measure up.
Been around here for a long, long time. I've lived out here, bought a farm just so I could race out here. And now I've had to get out of the business and sell my horses and sell my farm. and just like all of us have. And it really does need to be passed, or there's not going to be horse racing in Illinois anymore.
Horse tracks eke out whatever revenue they can. On this evening, I get a glimpse of a typical weeknight turnout at Balmoral Park. There are about 800 people here, but attendance nearly doubles on weekends. Old-timers sip on beer and wine that's for sale, and there are private suites where visitors are buying dinner. All in all, not a bad way to spend a warm summer evening, but maybe it's nice but not great for owners.
Business has been down a little bit. It's coming back this year, though, actually. Things are looking up for us a little bit. Things are picking up a little bit, the economy, and some of the people are coming back to the track.
Mike Belmonte is the general manager at Balmoral. He explains the track already makes money off things other than races and the booze. His track holds races three times a week, but the track's actually open every day except Christmas. There's an off-track betting parlor that allows for bets to be placed for horse races across the country, including the world-famous Churchill Downs in Kentucky. But even with this, Belmonte says the tracks just can't attract enough gambling dollars.
There's other sources of gaming now that people have, the boats in Illinois, and right close to here at Balmoral, you got Indiana casinos across the border. So there's a lot more opportunities for gaming than there used to be, and that's definitely cut into our business.
This is a sticking point. Other states like Indiana allow slots at tracks. They even got a term for them. They're called racinos. And they've lured not just bettors away from Illinois, but everything tied to horse racing, from trainers to jockeys. The industry here wants Illinois to catch up. But while lawmakers are trying, Governor Pat Quinn has said he's against the idea of more casinos. And he especially doesn't like the idea of slots at racetracks. Quinn says he wants better safeguards, including a ban on legislators accepting the industry's political contributions. In just the past year alone, horse racing interests ponied up more than $500,000 in contributions. Quinn wants the flow of cash to stop.
I believe in a strong ethical framework of oversight and integrity, no campaign money from gambling interests. Those are things that I've said over and over again. I'll keep saying them.
There is as many safeguards as humanly possible could be in this bill.
This is Illinois State Senator Terry Link, the bill's sponsor in the Senate. He's offered a proposal that would implement the ban on contributions.
We're more than happy to do it, and we will do it if he wants it. We're more than happy to do the campaign ban. We're not trying to embarrass the governor. I'm trying to work with the governor. I think the members have shown that, in this House, I know that we have a veto proof in there if we need it in November. And I think we have the same here in Senate.
Link is a Democrat from Waukegan. He says the state's budget is a mess, so it makes sense for the state to expand gambling. After all, the state will take a cut to the tune of about $400 million a year.
When we're slashing and cutting and, closing facilities and doing things that are hurting people left and right, and we can do something that will create jobs and bring in revenue without a tax increase on any person in the state of Illinois, they're willing to do it.
Another legislator who's pushing racetracks to have slots is State Rep Lou Lang. The Democrats' office is in Skokie, and he usually addresses urban and suburban issues. But he says he's sympathetic with rural Illinois, too, and he wants slots to strengthen the horse racing industry. All the horse breeders, groomers, trainers, and jockeys depend on it.
Until we want to get our heads out of the sand and fix this, we're going to continue to lose agribusiness jobs in Illinois. And even though I live in Cook County, where we have very few farms, I'm very familiar with how difficult this economy has been for the agribusiness community across our state, and I feel stronger than ever that this is a provision of the bill that must stay in.
Governor Quinn and the General Assembly have butted heads over the slot machines and racinos issue before, only to end in a stalemate that started all over again. That's something the industry doesn't want. After all, it depends on quick fun and fast horses. The last thing he wants is another slow political battle. I'm Michael Puente.
So shoot me, Sundream remains in front, and baby Anna. Sundream, baby Anna, so shoot me and Mike.
The long-term future of public media in central Illinois depends on the generosity of people like you who can make special gifts through their estate. Consider including WILL in your estate plan. Leave your own legacy and support what you love.
Your attorney can help you put your wishes into proper form. For information on the WILL Legacy Circle, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-7300 or online at will.illinois.edu/support.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 11th of June, 2012. It's the anniversary of the first FM broadcast, 1935. The inventor Edwin Armstrong gave a demonstration in Alpine, New Jersey. He demonstrated the clarity of FM compared to AM radio by playing classical music and also the sound of water being poured. It's the birthday of composer Richard Strauss, born in Munich, 1864, who wrote tone poems inspired by literary characters Don Juan, Don Quixote, and operas too, of course, Salome for one. Richard Strauss, who said, "I may not be a first-rate composer, but I am a first-class, second-rate composer." It's the birthday of the novelist William Styron, born Newport News, Virginia, 1925, author of Lie Down in Darkness, The Confessions of Nat Turner, and his memoir Darkness Visible, a memoir of madness. And since his death in 2006, a book of letters, a book of short stories, and a series of essays, Havana's in Camelot. It's the birthday of the poet and playwright Ben Jonson, born in London, 1572, who had a notoriously bad temper, once killed another actor in a duel, was put on trial, but around the same time, his first big play came out, Every Man in His Humor. William Shakespeare was one of the actors in the company, and even though he was a convicted felon, Ben Jonson became a court poet and hung around with royalty. And it's the anniversary of the great Broad Street Riot in Boston, 1837, on this day. A hot, humid Sunday afternoon, a fire engine company made up primarily of Protestant Yankees was coming back from Roxbury, where they'd put out a fire. They went to a saloon, had a few drinks. They started walking down Broad Street and passed a group of about 100 Irish immigrants on their way to a funeral. A young fireman named George Fay did something, maybe insulted somebody or hit somebody, and soon there was a melee in the street, at least 800 men fighting. The state militia had to be called out to disperse the riot. Here's a poem for today by James Cummins, Reading Hemingway. Reading Hemingway makes me so hungry for jambon, cheeses, and a dry white wine, cold, of